The Senate, please come back to order. Come to order. Members, please signify their presence by voting.
Roll show, 17 members present. Senator Donnelly. The roll shows 18 members present this morning, Madam President, this afternoon.
Members would stand. Senator Taylor is chaplain this afternoon.
Thank you. If you'll join me in prayer. Father, when we feel alone and burdened, let us feel your gentle touch. Be with us this day as we make decisions that involve those who trust us. Teach us that marvelous lesson that it is very possible. We may be mistaken occasionally. When we are wrong, make us willing to admit it, and when we are right, make us easy to live with. Help us to use the talents you gave us to do positive things today. Amen.
Senator Taylor, would you lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Senator Adams.
Madam President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread on through, the chaplain fee be waived and donated to the Glory Hole.
Hearing no objection, the prayer will be spread on the journal, the chaplain fee will be waived and donated to the Glory Hole. The Secretary, please certify the journal.
I wish to certify as a correctness of the journal for the 116th Legislative Day with the following correction. Page 38, 25, under amendment number 3, change, and so amendment number 3 failed to was adopted.
Senator Hoppe.
I move and ask unanimous consent the journal be approved as certified and corrected.
Hearing no objection, the journal is certified. That brings us to introduction of guests. Are there guests this afternoon? Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Madam President. Anyone in the body who reads the Doonesbury comic strip will recognize the fictional character that's portrayed today in the Miller Gallery. As the unofficial spokesperson for the tobacco industry, I've been asked to say that Mr. Butts is in Juneau to conduct an on-site review of the tobacco lobby's efforts to prevent a proposed $1 a pack increase in the state tobacco tax. You need not applaud too loudly, but please recognize Mr. Butts.
We have further introductions. Senator Duncan.
Thank you, Madam President. In Senator Ziegler's gallery, I have a number of constituents who are here working on the issue of tobacco, and I'd like to have the opportunity to introduce them. Some of them are from Zonta Tahini Middle School. Zonta Tahini Middle School. And the others from Juneau Douglas High School, and if they would stand. And they're with a couple of chaperones from Seven Circles Coalition, if I could introduce them at this time. David Jackson, Brenna Asper-Smith, Forrest Ray, Dan Fagnant, Maddie Levy, Leanne Painter, Jane Severin, Amela Steele, Rosie Slotnick, and Jeannie Mark, and Joanne Bloom. Well.
Are there further introductions? That brings us to messages from the governor.
Messages dated May 2, Madam President, the governor has read the following resolutions and transmitted the engrossed and roll copies to the Lieutenant Governor's Office for permanent filing. CSSGR 39 Resources, Environmental Protection Agency Draft National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System, General Permit for Placing Mine in Alaska. CS for Senate Joint Resolution Number 40, Judiciary MH, Extension of the U.S. Forest Service Timber Sale Contract with Ketchikan Pulp Company. House Concurrent Resolution Number 32, Establishing UCLA 27th Remembrance Day. Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 27, Suspending Uniform Rules Concerning House Bill 335 Related to the Big Game Commercial Services Board. Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 25 Relating to Supporting Homeschooling and Establishing Alaska Home Education Week. Madam President, on this date I have signed the following bills and transmitted the engrossed and roll copies to the Lieutenant Governor's Office for permanent filing. Senate Bill 300, an act relating to the Uniform Commercial Code, Chapter 17. Conference CS for House Bill 32, relating to administrative proceedings involving a determination of eligibility for a permanent fund dividend, Chapter 18. Senate Bill 312, purchase of an alcoholic beverage from a package store, Chapter 19. SIA Laws, 1996, sincerely, Coney Knowles, Governor. Those are all the messages this afternoon.
Are there messages from the House?
Message dated May 2nd. Madam President, the House has passed and returned CS for Senate Bill 186, Labor and Commerce relating to partnerships, CS for Senate Bill 193, Labor and Commerce requiring insurance coverage for certain costs of birth, CS for Senate Bill 303, Management of the Budget Reserve Fund, CS for Senate Bill 307, requiring the Department of Natural Resources to exchange with the federal government state land within Dude Creek Habitat Area, CS for Senate Bill 310, State Affairs, Corrective Amendments to the Alaska Statute, Senate Bill 316, Title Amended, changing the term disability to health in the context of insurance coverage. These bills have been referred for enrollment. Message dated May 3rd. Dear Senator Pierce, the House of Representatives respectfully invites the Senate to a joint session at 5 p.m. on Monday, May 6, 1996, for the purposes of considering the Governor's appointments to boards and commissions.
Senator Halpern?
I move and ask unanimous consent that the Senate accept the House's invitation for a joint session for confirmations Monday at 5 p.m.
Hearing no objection, we will accept the invitation. 5 p.m. Monday, confirmation, joint session.
Message dated May 2nd. Madam President, the House has passed and transmitted for consideration CS for House Bill 312, Resources Amended by the House Resources Committee, an act extending the date for a review of and report on the current law regarding subsistence use of fish and game, and delaying the repeal of the current law regarding subsistence use of fish and game, and providing for an effective date.
State Affairs.
Message dated May 2nd. Madam President, the House has passed committee substitute for Senate Bill 165 LNC with the following amendment. House CS for CS for Senate Bill 165 Hess relating to psychologists and psychological associates and returning for consideration.
Senator Halpern.
Madam President, I move that the Senate concur with the House amendment to committee substitute Senate Bill 165, thus adopting House committee substitute for committee substitute Senate Bill 165 Hess.
Senator Riga.
Madam President, once again, I have a member of my immediate family who may graduate with a degree in psychology, so I'd ask to be excused from voting on this bill.
There is objection. Senator Rieger, you do need to vote. Senator Duncan.
I just would ask for an explanation of what the House did to the bill.
Senator Green.
The main change that came about with this was in the order of the qualification. In the Senate version, the candidate would have to earn a master's degree, then complete 2 years of postmaster's supervised experience, then pass the examination to be eligible to practice independently. The House revised that so that the candidate would still earn the master's degree, then pass the examination to be eligible for supervised practice, then complete the 2 years of postmaster's supervised experience. On page 3, line 10, they added the phrase as defined in regulation. And the reason being, currently in regulation, there are specific detailed requirements as to what courses are required and how many semester hours are required before licensure. And this change would specify that the individual is only licensed to provide services within their training experience, quote, as defined in regulation.
We ready? Senator Taylor?
Can I have an ad, please?
Senate will stand at ease. Will the Senate please come back to order? Senator Duncan, were you seeking the floor on this concurrence vote?
No, I have my question answered.
Are you ready for the question?
Yes.
Question is, shall the Senate concur in the House amendment to committee substitute Senate Bill 165, Labor and Commerce, therefore adopting the House committee substitute Senate Bill 165, Hess? Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Would the Secretary please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Would the Secretary please record the roll? The Senate has concurred in the House amendment to committee substitute Senate Bill 165, Labor and Commerce. Therefore, adopting the House committee substitute Senate Bill 165, Hess. Madam Secretary?
Secretary, may I second? Madam President, the House has passed CS for Senate Bill 198, Finance, with the following amendment. House CS for Senate Bill 198, Resources, establishing the Homer Airport Critical Habitat Area and returning for consideration.
Senator Halpin?
I move that the Senate concur in the House amendment to committee substitute Senate Bill 198, thus adopting House committee substitute for committee substitute Senate Bill 198, Resources.
Is there debate? The question is, shall the Senate concur in the House amendment to committee substitute Senate Bill 198, Finance? Therefore, adopting the House committee substitute Senate Bill 198, Resources. Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Would the Secretary please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Would the Secretary please record the roll? The Senate has concurred in the House amendment to committee substitute Senate Bill 198, Finance. Therefore, adopting the House committee substitute Senate Bill 198, Resources, by a vote of 20 yeas and 0 nays. Madam Secretary.
Message dated May 2nd. Madam President, the House has passed CS Senate Bill 250, Finance Am, with the following amendment. House CS for Senate Bill 250, Finance Am H, relating to the University of Alaska and to assets of the University of Alaska, authorizing the University of Alaska to select additional state public domain land, designating that land as university trust land, and describing the principles applicable to the land's management and the development of its resources, and defining the net income from the University of Alaska's endowment trust fund as university receipts subject to prior legislative appropriation, returned with the House letter of intent.
Senator Halpin.
I move that the Senate concur in the House amendment to committee substitute Senate Bill 250, thus adopting House committee substitute for committee substitute Senate Bill 250, Finance, amended House.
Senator Halpin.
Madam President, before the vote on concurrence, I move the letter of intent.
Letter of intent has been moved. Senator Duncan?
Yeah, may we have it at ease, please?
That will stand at ease. Please come back to order. Senator Duncan?
Yeah, Madam President, I thought perhaps you would allow, even though the letter of intent has been moved, perhaps we could ask the sponsor of the legislation to explain the differences in the bill before we go to the letter of intent vote.
Senator Frank.
Thank you, Madam President. The differences between the House and Senate version are on a sheet that had been distributed. The House Resources Committee made changes, including a requirement that the legislature approve or disapprove all the lands to be conveyed. That's a very substantial change from the Senate version. So in other words, the legislature will have to approve the actual conveyance of the individual parcels. On pages 16, 6 through 12, they add language that lays out that nothing in this act will be contrary to the settlement that was reached between the university and Gulf Coast Timber. That was important to the environmental community. Also, provision on page 7, lines 14 through 19, that nothing in this act would be inconsistent with the terms of the mental health trust settlement was added. Probably wasn't necessary, but it was added for clarification and assurance. And that on page 11, lines 6 through 7, that clarifies that the management of the lands has to be consistent with the bill and comply with the provisions of this act. In the House Finance Committee, they added language limiting the selections to no more than an additional 25% of the total acreage, and that's consistent with the way that the ANILCA language read, so that the mining community was concerned that they would be doing a bunch of over-selections, and this limits their over-selection to 25%. On the House floor, an amendment was made to prohibit the sale of tide lands or submerged lands. There had been a concern that those lands should not be conveyed away from the University or the state. And on page 10, line 30, we reduced the time frame for conveyance from 20 years to 6 years. And that was done to ensure that the university have a limited time to show which lands they were interested in and to demonstrate that the process could work. If the lands are not fully transferred to university in that time, I do envision the university wanting to come back to the legislature for further authorization. But at that time, the legislature can make a further assessment as to the appropriateness of further selections and the specific items and whether or not they have a good track record and whether or not they want to reauthorize it if they haven't done transferred the full entitlement. And then the letter of intent was offered as an alternative to actual law that would suggest that they do a forced demonstration project encompassing the principles of multiple use and sustained yield management and to illustrate how timber in the forest can be completely and profitably used, including in-state value-added product manufacturing to the highest degree possible. So the environmental community was interested in having the university do that sort of a demonstration project. The university intends to do that, and the letter of intent just indicates that it's also the legislature's intent that the university follow through on that commitment to do that. And I would be happy to try to answer any questions that members might have.
Senator Adams.
Thank you. Recently, we passed a piece of legislation here that organizes unorganized areas of the state of Alaska. My question is then, with this piece of legislation, who selects first? Who's in line to select first the land? And what procedures then will be used?
Senator Frank.
The university would work with the Department of Natural Resources in nominating land, and they would logically stay away from lands that were highly prized by forming municipalities, existing municipalities with unfulfilled land entitlements. I would imagine they'll stay away from areas that are hotly contested by environmental groups or other sensitive areas. They'll have to work that out. If they fail to work it out in a fashion that meets the approval of the legislature can reject any of the lands or all of the lands that are submitted. So the legislature is fully in the loop now. Again, all land conveyances will have to be approved. Specific lands will have to be approved. So any of us that are here or any of our successors will be able to ensure that the lands that are conveyed do meet the public interest and are not so controversial as to cause problems. So I think there's lots of checks and balances still remaining.
Is there further debate? Are we ready for the question on the letter of intent? Is there objection to the letter of intent? Hearing none, the letter of intent is adopted. Is there further debate on the concurrence? Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the Senate concur in the House amendments to committee substitute Senate Bill 250 Finance amended, therefore adopting the House committee substitute Senate Bill 250 Finance amended House? Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Will the secretary please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Senator Taylor? Senator Taylor changes from nay to yea. Does any other member wish to change their vote? Secretary, please record the roll. The Senate has concurred in the House amendments to committee substitute Senate Bill 250 Finance amended, therefore adopting the House committee substitute Senate Bill 250 Finance amended House. The vote was 20 yeas and 0 nays.
Message dated May 2nd, Madam President, the House has passed Senate Bill 321 amended with the following amendment. House CS Senate Bill 321 Judiciary relating to incompetency to stand trial, and it is transmitted with the House letter of intent.
Senator Halper.
I move the Senate concur with the House amendment to Senate Bill 321, thus adopting House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 321 Judiciary. I believe the sponsor recommends a yes vote.
Is there debate? Senator Halpin?
I believe there's a letter of intent that needs to be moved before final passage.
Is it a House or a Senate letter? The House letter of intent, it's right behind the House CS.
I move the adoption of the House letter of intent and await the recommendation of the sponsor.
Letter of intent has been moved. Senator Taylor?
I assume this letter of intent does no disservice to the legislation as it comes back, but as often occurs when we find ourselves with a very difficult concept, it merely adding more verbiage to it doesn't necessarily make it clearer or easier to understand. I think the House has attempted to accomplish that through this letter of intent, because of the narrow line that falls, of course, between those people we expect to be treated responsibly for their actions and those who do not have the capacity to act responsibly. With that, I would commend to you, I guess, the letter of intent.
Senator Duncan. Senate will stand at ease. Will the Senate please come back to order? There is a motion to adopt the House letter of intent for Senate Bill 321. Is there objection to the letter of intent? Hearing none, the letter of intent has been adopted. Is there debate on the main motion? Senator Taylor.
I had been asked during the break to give a brief explanation of the changes. The primary change occurs on page 2 at lines 24 through the rest of the page and on to the next. And what they have done there by adding in a couple new paragraphs is if you look back to your old bill on page 3, lines 23, the whole section 3, they omitted that section. They omitted it because what we had done was to provide additional language into the definition of mental disease or defect, which would have meant that any person being caught up in our system of institutionalization or whatever, or being involved in the legal process and needing this definition, could have been found not to be suffering from that malady if they had a driver's license, voted, had employment, and so on. It changed the entire definition of mental disease or defect. What the House chose to do is omit that paragraph, take it out of that section, and instead insert it under section number 1, which provides that during the incompetency proceedings, the judge shall review various standards of evidence, and they have included within the judge's findings section that the court must make a determination whether a person has sufficient intellectual functioning to adapt or cope ordinary demands of life, and then it lists driver's license and the other subjects. That was the primary substantive change that was made between the two bills, and I think, in fact, it improves the legislation, so I support that.
Is there further debate on the concurrence? Are we ready for the question? The question is, shall the Senate concur in the House amendment to Senate Bill 321 amended therefore adopting the House Committee substitute Senate Bill 321 Judiciary. Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Would the Secretary please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Would the Secretary please record the roll? The Senate has concurred in the House amendment to Senate Bill 321 amended, therefore adopting the House Committee substitute Senate Bill 321 Judiciary. The vote was 19 yeas and 1 nay. Senator Salo.
Thank you. May we return to introduction of guests, please?
Hearing no objection, we're back to introductions.
Thank you. Actually, I'm going to introduce a constituent of Senator Rieger's, but a good friend of mine and a past constituent of mine, and also the past president of the Alaska Nurses Association. Would you help me welcome Patty Hong?
Senator Miller, under introductions.
Yes, Madam President. Senator Miller, how are you? A good friend of mine and a constituent and a former member of the Borough Assembly up there and a private businessman, Buzz Hoder.
Madam Secretary, are there any further messages from the House?
Those are all the House messages.
Are there any communications?
There are no communications.
Senator Halford?
Madam President, I'd like to take up the reconsideration of Senate Committee substitute for Senate Bill 136, Finance.
Senate will stand at ease. Senate, please come back to order. We have it before us reconsideration of the second CS Senate Bill 136 Finance amended. We are in third reading. Senator Sharp.
Madam President, I would ask unanimous support to move back to second reading for the specific purpose of amendment number 6.
Hearing no objection, we are in second reading. Senator Sharp.
Madam President, amendment number 6 would increase the amount on line 9, for page 19, line 20, from $750,000 to $1,750,000, adding $1 million back to Senior Citizens Housing Development Program. This is Alaska Housing Finance Corporation corporate receipts. The amount of the original amount of $750,000 was what we had thought was the same level of funding as last year, which did not turn out to be true. Last year, there was, by competitive submission of proposals, there was 3 programs funded. We would like to keep it, the ability to fund 3 programs under the same conditions again this year on submission of applications. So with that, I would ask support for this amendment.
Senator Sharp, you didn't actually move the amendment. Would you please do so?
I would move amendment number 6, Madam Chairman, President.
Amendment number 6 has been moved. Is there objection to amendment number 6? Hearing no objection, amendment number 6 has been adopted. Senator Halpin.
Madam President, I move and ask unanimous consent that Committee Substitute 136 Finance be returned to second reading for purposes of specific amendment number 7.
Hearing no objection, we are in second reading. Senator Halpin.
Madam President, I move amendment number 7. It deletes funding in the capital budget that's also covered in the operating budget. That's the first $200,000 within the Department of Fish and Game, and moves it to the second priority of the department, which is the land status information system. It also adds back Anchorage ride sharing and transit marketing, which was in the governor's bill. That is 100% federal funds and needs to be added back. Has no general fund impact. The amendment has no general fund impact. I ask unanimous consent.
Hearing no objection, amendment number 7 has passed. Senator Adams.
I move and ask unanimous consent that we go back to second for the purpose of amendment number 8.
Hearing no objection, we're in second reading.
This is a technical amendment. The amendment that I had the other night had a wrong federal law, and I believe this is the right. I worked this out with the senator from Fairbanks that had Alaska Housing Finance, and it's just technical in nature.
Is there objection to amendment number 8? Senator Scherr.
I'll just add to the senator from Kotzebue's explanation. This does clear up the situation. I think there's 14 regional housing authorities. All but four have already done this. The previous language would have prohibited any of them until all of them had complied, and I didn't think that was fair, and I would recommend the amendment.
Is there objection to amendment number 8? Hearing none, amendment number 8 has been adopted. We're in third reading. Is there debate? Hearing none, the question is, shall the second committee substitute Senate Bill 136 Finance Amended pass the Senate on reconsideration? Members may proceed to vote. All members voting, and the secretary please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary, please record the roll. Second committee substitute Senate Bill 136 Finance Amended has passed the Senate on reconsideration by a vote of 11 yeas and 9 nays. Senator Halford?
I move the effective date sections on committee substitute Senate Bill 136 Finance.
Members may proceed to vote. All members voting, the secretary please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary, please record the roll. The effective dates in the second committee substitute Senate Bill 136 Finance Amended have passed the Senate by a vote of 18 yeas and 2 nays. Senator Huffman?
And I move the constitutional budget reserve 3/4 vote section.
Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? The secretary please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary, please record the roll. The budget reserve fund sections of the second committee substitute Senate Bill 136 Finance Amended have failed to pass the Senate. The vote was 11 yeas and 9 nays. Senator Kelly?
Madam President, I bring up reconsideration of Senate Bill 216 at this time.
Senate will stand at ease. Madam Secretary, did you read the title?
No, I didn't.
Would you please read the title, Madam Secretary?
CS for Senate Bill 216 Finance, title amended. It's the Omnibus State Fees and Cost Assessment Bill before the Senate in reconsideration.
Senator Taylor?
Yeah, this has moved at pretty good speed and also has within it, I think, several provisions that I've not had a chance to be brought up to date on. Could somebody tell me what the cost of this is going to be to Alaskans?
I'm in favor of the amendment. I'm in favor of leaving the bill as it is.
Senator Lincoln.
Madam President, I rise in support of Amendment 2, and I'm not making a mistake. It is in support. The arguments that I've heard...
Bill 216, Finance, title amended, passed the Senate on reconsideration. Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? The secretary, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary, please record the roll. Committee substitute Senate Bill 216, Finance, title amended, has passed the Senate on reconsideration by a vote of 13 yeas and 7 nays. Senator Halford.
I move the effective dates on committee substitute Senate Bill 216.
Members may proceed to vote. All members voted. Secretary, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary, please record the roll. Committee substitute Senate Bill 216, Finance, title amended, effective dates have passed the Senate by a vote of 20 yeas and 0 nays. Senator Taylor?
Can we move up, back up the calendar and introduction of guests, please?
Hearing no objection, we're under introductions.
Oh, over in the Ziegler Gallery, a dear friend, member of the Ketchikan School Board, up here working with the Hospital Association, Maggie Sarver. Nice to have you here, Maggie. You're welcome.
Will the Senate please stand at ease? Go ahead. You can go for it. Senate, please come back to order. Madam Secretary, are there any communications?
There are no communications.
Understanding committee reports.
Resources Committee considered House Joint Resolution 66 amended, opposing the American Heritage Areas programs. Signed to pass into Lehman Chair, Senator Pierce, signed no recommendation. Senators Lincoln, Taylor, Halford, and Frank, zero fiscal vote. House Joint Resolution number 66 amended has no further referral.
Rules.
Finance Committee considered CSHB 109 Judiciary, telephone solicitations, advertisements, and directory listings, recommends the Senate CS and adopts the House the letter of intent by the House Judiciary Committee. Signed no recommendation. Senators Frank and Halper co-chairs. Senators Phillips, Donnelly, Jarf, and Sharp. Senator Rieger signed to pass. Zero fiscal notes. CS for House Bill number 109 Judiciary has no further referral.
Rules.
Judiciary Committee considered CS for House Bill 306 Judiciary, relating to a lien for services provided by a hospital nurse or a physician. Signed no recommendation. Senator Taylor chair. Senator Ellis, Miller, and Adams. Senator Green signed. Do pass. CS for House Bill number 306 Judiciary has no further referral.
Rules.
Judiciary Committee considered CS for House Bill 379 Judiciary, authorizing establishment of community dispute resolution centers to foster the resolution of disputes between juvenile offenders and their victims. Recommends the Senate CS signed to pass. Senator Taylor chair. Senators Green and Miller. Senator Adams signed no recommendation. Zero fiscal notes. CS for House Bill 379 Judiciary has a further referral to Finance Committee. Finance Committee considered CS for House Bill 436 Transportation, relating to purchase and sale of mobile homes by mobile home dealers. Signed to pass. Senators Frank and Halford co-chair. Senators Phillips and Sharp. Senators Rieger, Donnelly, and Jarf signed no recommendation. Zero and fiscal note attached. CS for House Bill 436 Transportation has no further referral.
Rules.
Finance Committee considered CS for House Bill 543 Finance title amended. State Airport and Air Navigational Facilities leases. Signed to pass. Senators Frank and Halford co-chair. Senator Rieger signed no recommendation. Senators Phillips, Donnelly, and Jarf. Zero fiscal note. CS House Bill 543 Finance title amended has no further referral.
Rules.
Rules Committee considered CS House Bill 168 Hess, temporary permits for certain optometrists. Recommends calendar signed to calendar. Senator Miller chair. Senator Sharp, Duncan, and Sala. House Bill 432, practice of veterinary medicine. Signed to calendar. Senator Miller chair. Senator Sharp and Sala. House Bill 447, traditional means of access for traditional outdoor uses. Signed to calendar. Senator Miller chair. Senators Pierce and Sharp. CS for House Bill 538, second fish, participating in the Bering Sea Korean hare crab fishery. Signed to calendar. Senator Miller chair. Senators Pierce, Duncan, and Sala. House Bill 539, change of the name of the Alaska Soil and Water Conservation Board. Signed to calendar. Senator Miller chair. Senators Pierce, Sharp, and Sala. Rules Committee considered CS for House Bill 520, relating to death investigation and inquests. House Bill 525, permanent fund investments. House Concurrent Resolution Number 25 amended, declaring May 15th, 96th, 381st Intelligent Squadron Logistics Division Day, and CS for House Concurrent Resolution 26 Finance amended, creation of the Public Inebriate Task Force. Signed to calendar. Senator Miller chair. Senators Pierce, Duncan, Sharp, and Sala. These bills and resolutions appear on today's calendar, and those are all the standing committee reports this afternoon.
Are there reports of special committees?
There are no special committee reports.
Are there Senate resolutions for introduction?
There are no Senate resolutions.
Are there Senate bills for introduction?
There are no Senate bills for introduction.
Excuse me, that brings us to consideration of the daily calendar.
C is for Senate Bill number 215, Finance, by the Senate Finance Committee, an act relating to the functions of state agencies and providing for an effective date. This was held from yesterday. It has amendment number 1 by Senator Rigger, and it has been distributed.
I would call the House. We'll stand at ease while the call is satisfied. The Senate, please come back to order. Will the Senate please come back to order? We're in second reading on Senate Bill 215. Senator Rieger.
Madam President, I move amendment number 1, ask unanimous consent.
There is objection, Senator Rieger.
Madam President, in the Finance Committee deliberations on the section which is addressed in the bill, page 10 and 11, there was an amendment offered on various agencies of the state hiring a person to lobby the legislature or a municipality, and the committee tried to draft language which drew a distinction between regular employees and contract lobbyists, and we thought we accomplished it with the phrase regular employment, but our drafters, when the amendment was sent to them, said that language really did not draw much of a distinction. So instead, they have drafted up language which reflects the actual intent of the motion which was made in Senate Finance. And it would clarify that regular employees of agencies could still talk to the legislature or a municipality about issues regarding the, and actually be paid to do it as part of their duties, about issues regarding their agency.
Is the objection maintained to amendment number 1? Hearing no further objection, amendment number 1 has been adopted.
Amendment?
Senator Donovan?
Is there an amendment number 2 already?
Yes.
I just hadn't seen it.
Amendment number 2 by Senator Adams deletes section 28, and it's been distributed.
Okay. Senator Adams?
I haven't moved it yet. I move amendment number 2.
Senator Adams has moved his amendment. There is objection. Senator Adams.
Thank you. If people would go to page number 11, line 27 through 31st, it's the limitation on entities to which a state may disburse money. And it states that notwithstanding any other provision of law, the state might not disburse state money to an entity that is not incorporated under or subject to the laws of the state of Alaska. This limitation does not apply to an Anhidalt Island Indian Reserve, and it has a termination date. This section applies only until July 1st, 1998. But basically, there is no basis for the claim by the member in this body who wrote this, that the member from Chugach, that allowed state funds to flow to unincorporated native villages. Will cause more litigation, and there's no basis for that. But under current law, tribal councils receive state funds as long as they're used for a public purpose, and those services are made available to all citizens on a non-discriminatory basis, so everybody in that community can receive those particular services. If this piece of legislation is passed with Section 28, which I'm referring to, our native villages will immediately challenge it in court, most probably as a class action by 227 native villages. And once we go to court, the state will lose.
because providing tribes with state funds will neither enhance nor diminish tribal claims to Indian country. The U.S. Supreme Court has repeatedly ruled over and over that tribes getting state funds is irrelevant to Indian country question. And that has been answered through a legal opinion that has gone to judiciary members in the Senate. And that legal opinion is available to all of us. And also, setting up new nonprofits is not as simple as a Senate finance version states, because of the fact you just cannot fill out a simple form to do this. It takes time and money, and which none of our villages have at this particular point to do this. Also, Section 28 here is discriminatory, it's race-based, and as blatant denies that the Alaska Native people equal rights guaranteed by the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. This particular section has constitutional problems, as it. If passed, Section 28 will deny equal citizenship status under the laws for tribes. It's a status now that is enjoyed by citizens of urban municipalities. Under this particular Section 28, states' benefits will no longer be available to Alaska Native villages. However, under federal law, which the state of Alaska must comply with, it recognizes all 227 Native villages as federal recognized tribes, all of which are not under federal law, but are subject to the laws of the state of Alaska. And we all recognize that tribes are federally recognized. They are not racially defined groups. And as the senator from Chugas would have us believe in this particular claim, their claim to self-governance and self-determination should not deprive them of their right to citizenship, for they too are citizens of the state, just like everybody else is in this room. The question of Indian country is not one for the state of Alaska to decide. By the legal opinion, Indian country is a federal question, one that we all believe that must be decided in federal courts. However, to attempt to punish Native villages for calling themselves tribes is an affront. It's really an insult to Alaska's first citizens. They're the first ones here in Alaska, and it smacks in the minds of small-minded yet dangerous bigotry. The state has certain protection in revenue sharing process. Villages have continued to sign waivers of any tribal immunity from lawsuits. And furthermore, the waivers require that state's funds be spent for the benefit of all the residents of those communities, whether white or Native. And finally, the Section 28 is purely punitive and only intends to punish all Native villages, and is based on gross exaggeration of a few in this particular body. This bill will create great undue harm to all Native villages without just cause. People will suffer for this. If this is the attitude and the treatment of this legislature, then rural Alaska should consider the economy of Anchorage and Fairbanks. This type of action, by this section being in this piece of legislation, is going to wake up a sleeping giant of rural Alaska. And you ask, how could that do? How could we wake up the people in rural Alaska? What I would do is I would encourage every village corporation, every Native corporation, every nonprofit, every Native like myself, to remove all your money from the Alaska banks
remove it. Deposit your money outside in CFIRST or any other financial institution. And I will guarantee you the economy in Alaska in those two communities will hurt. One of the other things I would suggest to my community of Kotzebue is also to hurt them, is to start purchasing your goods and your services from outside the state of Alaska. Because that's all Anchorage is. It's just a service base. It's just, that's all you provide to us in rural Alaska. And then you want to do this to us. If we as state government choose not to provide funds for unincorporated Native communities, then it makes sense, and it should make sense to you, for those unincorporated Native communities not to share their wealth also with this state of Alaska. That's what they should be doing. And I think that this is a dangerous consequence for us, and we might be encouraging rather than discouraging the formation of unincorporated communities. If we start targeting rural residents who are mainly minorities like myself, then the rural natives are going to ask you the question, who is next? So I plead with you to accept this amendment.
Thank you, Madam President. Of course, the member refers to a provision that for a two-year period requires incorporation under the nonprofit or for-profit corporate laws until we know the outcome of a number of court cases. I think the characterization of that is totally contrary to the performance of this legislature, including this session. For the last several days, we have moved money, made amendments, changed things around for these very same communities to make sure that they got the money that the state was trying to get them. All we're trying to ask is that they take the short amount of time it takes to file unincorporated status with the state of Alaska and be subject to the laws of the state of Alaska. The state of Alaska has never appropriated money to tribes with the exception of Metlakatla, because until the governor took action to withdraw the state's objection, the state followed the ruling of our Supreme Court, which said that there were not tribal entities in Alaska, with the exception of Metlakatla. Now, there's a little bit of duplication in that, because the state has always encouraged and tried to get maximum benefits for Alaska citizens through whatever the federal government will do for Native Alaskans. When the Land Claims Act passed, there were those in the South 48 who said, that's the end. There are no more Native benefits for Alaskans. And Alaskans have always been unified to ensure that every act that passed since then said that for purposes of benefits, Alaska Natives are always treated with all the benefits of any entity outside. It was only the question of powers, governmental powers, that brings us this problem. And that question was brought to the forefront by this governor's withdrawal of the state's opposition to that recognition. Until this last year, there were two lists. There was a list that said these entities will be treated as tribes for the purposes of benefits, and these entities have all the powers of tribes under the federal determinations that are parallel to those that are outside. The problem is that we have organizations that are suing the state. They're suing the state to close state roads. They're suing the state to close state property, to limit state assets that were appropriated by state dollars to use by one group or another. The court cases include the effort to tax contractors that were there to build schools appropriated by this legislature to give to that community. If you look at the Chickering case, the Tyonic case, where we have people excluded by race from living in a community, those are the kind of cases that are raised by this. It's too bad that a very few communities, though, really muddy the water for everyone else.
because, and I think it was stated very well by one of the Southeast Alaska Native leaders, we never considered ourselves tribes, he said. We always had the things that we wanted. We dealt with the state, and this state has always been very progressive in dealing with it. I think that's the problem of things like the Native American Rights Fund using small villages to try and divide Alaskans by filing lawsuits that are against the entire system the state operates under. Our state Supreme Court has been very clear that they do not recognize multiple jurisdictions. They can't. The system doesn't work that way. This amendment is a defensive amendment. It's sunsetted in 2 years. It is simply intended to maintain the status quo, to guarantee the services to the people that we're trying to serve, and we've amended, changed, and worked on those appropriations for those very people over the last 2 days on this floor. It is not intended to be either a final solution or the last word on the issue, but it is intended to avoid things like what I think every member got a copy of, this Native American Rights Fund fundraising letter about how they should be suing the state, and they need money to be able to do it. Suing the state to take over basic functions of state government. That, Madam President, would be a very serious mistake, and that's why the language is in there.
Senator Adams.
This action by Section 28 is a reaction. It's a reaction to what the governor did by the withdrawal of a litigation. But the majority leader and members in this group knows that there are other lawsuits that can take the place of the withdrawal of this one. There are still lawsuits in place that can handle that. One of the things I don't want us to do is take it out on rural residents that cannot protect themselves. And that's the reason I am offering this amendment. If the governor is the one that take it, then we need to take that issue with him and not put it on the backs of rural Alaskans who are not here tonight to protect themselves.
Senator Torkerson.
Madam President, I'd just like to set the record straight, at least as far as the unincorporated community matching grant program goes. There are 68 Native communities that are involved in that. 28 of them are already nonprofit corporations. Or excuse me, 48 are already nonprofit corporations. And the rest are IRAs or tribal councils. Remember, when we had a debate here on another bill a couple weeks ago, I handed out paperwork showing that. I believe I'm...
Senator was earlier talking about that unfortunately there's very few that have tested or have gone to court, and there were two that you mentioned. And those two, at one point, I did represent both of those. Why are we punishing the many? Because two communities have exercised their rights to go to court or exercise their rights to ask for what they particularly believe in. I think that is what this country is made out of. We are a free country. We are one that if we feel that we've been wronged, whether it's a community or an individual, that is the right to go to court. And I looked into whether the signing of the waiver, that every single community has to sign a waiver. And there's a question of whether it's unconstitutional. That waiver says that they will not sue. That waiver is something that each community that is unincorporated has to sign. And we have a decision by the Attorney General that says it is enforceable. So I don't understand the argument on that. I believe that we are subject to the laws of the state of Alaska, every community. And for the references in the capital budget, and I didn't rise to argue that point, but every single community in the capital budget that said Rampart Native Council Native was taken out. If it said Rampart IRA Council, IRA was taken out. If it said Rampart Traditional Council, Traditional was removed. So in every instance, now we've seen where this body apparently is trying to eradicate every acknowledgement of a traditional, a Native, or an IRA council. And I really do think that's unfortunate, because we haven't had the problem here in the state. And this truly does, in my estimation, cause a division that doesn't have to be there. I think we're putting up a red flag that doesn't have to be there. We've not had any problem with this. So why are we all of a sudden deciding that, I guess, somebody is going to have too much power? Last year we did away with the Monte Carlo night because some communities were interested in gaming. And so all Monte Carlo nights were disapproved, and at the expense of many nonprofits that were donating to those least fortunate. I certainly support Amendment Number 2. I think we're absolutely going down the wrong path when we ignore those communities that are traditional or IRA, and the senator that spoke previously about the numbers of folks that are involved. I have one community that is going from an unincorporated community to an IRA. And they went through that whole process, and it isn't finalized yet. But they went through the whole process last year. So we don't know what the whole number, the numbers are for that's going to impact this Section 28. And I would say to you, those that would argue that that you could just incorporate and business goes on as usual. Well, I was thinking about Rampart Village Council. If they, you could say, okay, Rampart Village Council, you continue to exist, but you also have to have an unincorporated entity. So it has to be Rampart Council and Rampart Village Council. You might have you'd have to have two entities set up there. When you get federal money, does that go to the council? Does that go to the Native Council? If it is a matching grant that you get from the state, the federal government is recognizing the Rampart Native Council, so it goes to, or the Rampart Village Council, excuse me, it would go, the federal money, part of it would go to the Village Council, and then the state money would have to go to this other entity that may or may not be the same people. I think we're causing a horrendous paper nightmare here on how those funds are going to be commingled, which entity it goes to. I don't think that we've looked at this as clearly as we should to know what the total impact is going to be on many, many communities throughout the state. But it's something that just doesn't have to be done.
Senator Halford.
Thank you, Madam President. Of course, the impact on dollars is nothing. The impact in terms of paperwork is next to nothing. CNRA explained that in the process and how they issue their grants now, they could include a non-incorporated application right in that package. To say that, you know, it's not a problem, I think is a mistake. I think it is a problem for people who are excluded from a state highway, such as a Chickaloon. I think it's a problem for people who are excluded from a state airport. I think it's a problem for people who are in court and have been in court for years about being excluded from an entire community by race. I think it's also a problem for a corporation that spends thousands of dollars being represented in court
by lawyers to avoid a taxation that the state says is not a legal taxation. They don't have to pay, but they have to deal with it if they're going to do the contract to build a facility for the people of the community, in the community, that this legislature appropriated to give them. I think there are some legitimate problems, and this solution is a temporary solution. It's not a radical solution. It's a simple solution. It doesn't reallocate the dollars. It goes forward and avoids future problems, hopefully, and maintains the ability to get the money, to do the things by the same people in the same place.
Senator Charterson.
Thank you. Madam President, I'm still opposed to the amendment. Did I get that right? I wanted to say again that starting a nonprofit corporation is not really that big of an operation for these communities to go through. It is a one-page form, has four sections to fill out. One of those sections is a name. The rest is the purpose. Another section is really not that big a deal. It costs $50 to register your nonprofit corporation. That would make a total of $1,400 to make the entire problem go away that we're facing right now. It's not a big financial impact for rural Alaska.
Thank
you, Madam President. I rise in support of the amendment, and I rise for several reasons. One is I think that the state has been polarized enough as it is. Another is that I don't know that there has not been one Alaskan that's been here for quite some time that says, hey, I don't care how they do it outside, we're going to do it the way we want to do it here in the state. And I think over the years, a lot of the communities and people in the outlying communities, particularly rural communities, have felt that they've lived in a fishbowl. There have been a number of people that have come in, not from the community. Some would stay short periods of time. Others would stay for longer periods. They would study, probe, dig up some of the graves, take away some of the artifacts, all in the name of science and whatever else you want to call it. I've had people tell me we're tired of being studied. Think about what's happened ever since the territorial days and statehood. BIA has come in, they've studied. We've sent teams of untold state employees to go out to study not only the resources, the land, but the people. Sociologists, psychologists, the list goes on. They've all gone out there. And people have just finally said, that's it. We want to have a little bit of autonomy. We want to be able to have a little bit of respect. We want to have some consideration for our beliefs, our languages, our culture, our history. And many of the communities out there have participated and lived under the state system. And since the mid-80s, we've cut back considerably on revenue sharing, municipal assistance. Communities are having a difficult time being able to keep up with the reporting and the paperwork that is necessary to continue under many of the state grants that we have available, and to maintain the type of bureaucracy out there. And I think last year and a couple of years ago, we were very much concerned about what was happening in terms of revenue sharing, municipal assistance, and we had cautioned at that time if those reductions were to be made to a great extent, that we would see communities out there starting to go the other direction. Was it bad? No. A lot of it was for the, not necessarily the convenience, but for the survival of the community and to be able to continue with the basic services that they felt were necessary for the people out there, whether it was municipal services or whether it was for the education. I guess the concern I've had, and I've mentioned it earlier, is that the state doesn't need this type of polarization. It does not need to have the urban areas fighting the rural areas. I think that there is room in this state for everybody to live. There's room in this state for everybody to grow.
And I think most of all, there's probably a lot of room in this state to respect everybody's beliefs and their feelings, particularly about the management of their local municipalities. And in some cases, you have no other options but not to have a city council. To have some other entity out there represent the leadership of the community. You know, IRA councils have been established. Other organizations have been established. And I think probably between now and the time we push one of these buttons here, that we should all think a little bit about some of the concerns there that we have had. And this state here is all dependent on one another, whether it's resources or whether it's a community, but most of all, it's the people working together.
Senator Taylor?
I wasn't going to participate in this debate because I thought that the hearings held previous on the tribal issue should have resolved many of the questions, but in fact, we're talking around all those issues and we're not really talking directly to them. The word polarized is a fascinating term. And I raised the question, who first raised this issue? Where did this polarization come from? Who decided in Alaska, who made the decision to exclude people from their community based on race? Did Anchorage do that? Did Fairbanks do that? I mean, can you imagine the headlines if tomorrow morning the Fairbanks City Council decided that only people of a certain race could come into their community? My God, it'd blow the lid right off of most of America. They would not believe that anything that bigoted, that biased, that racial in nature could possibly take place in America today. We'd find ourselves shunned by the world. People would be talking about us like they talked about South Africa. Are there communities in Alaska today claiming a tribal status and claiming the authority and right to do exactly that? Yes, there are. Were they encouraged to do so by the governor when he withdrew from the Venati case? Absolutely. Do we have the right, on behalf of all the people of Alaska, to utilize state funds to support an entity that will determine benefits and the right to share in those state funds and those state services based on race? We don't have the right to do that. That's a complete abrogation of the Constitution that the people of Alaska said, we the people shall abide by. We have sought and received the best advice we can from attorneys that have worked in this field for years, that by entering into such a transaction and by providing state funds to a tribal entity, we may very well be assisting in the overall process of that tribe claiming Indian country status. Once that status is established, you then have the federal government allowing that entity all of the rights and benefits of sovereignty. I don't know how you're sovereign to two different masters. I don't know how we retain our sovereignty as citizens of Alaska and still choose to place our allegiance with a different sovereign, a sovereign that does not respect or abide by the Constitution of the United States, that recognizes none of our Bill of Rights, and that those Bill of Rights cannot be enforced, even in a federal court. We had direct testimony on that throughout those hearings. I think it would be a sad day if, in fact, we in the Alaska legislature were to utilize funds for the purposes that some seek to use them for within these communities. This action that was taken within this budget is truly defensive in nature. It is not this legislature or our communities that I'm aware of that are asserting tribal sovereignty and status and attempting to exclude people or change benefits to people based on race. We're not doing that.
What we are doing is still attempting to provide those very same communities with the same level of state funding that they had before, and all we're asking them to do is to please put this racial question aside. Don't force us into this corner. Accept these state funds and do so through a nonprofit corporation that will not have tribal status and will not be claiming sovereign immunity. If you will please do this for us, we will continue to fund those services in the same fashion we have before, and we'll put a 2-year sunset on this thing, so as a consequence, 2 years from now, we can all sit down around the table together and one more time figure out if we are going to have communities in Alaska who discriminate based on race.
Senator Adams.
2 years is too long. Tonight's the night that we should do this. I don't know if many of you used to remember the signs that used to be on national organizations here in Alaska when I tracked satellites in Fairbanks. The sign outside the door was "No natives or dogs allowed." You remember those signs in front of your Elks or some of your organizations? Because you had to go in with a sponsor. This amendment right now brings us back to those type of days. There was one, a shooting in Fairbanks. It's drive-by. They had to shoot the first native that was around. And I think that's what we're going to. We're going back by this, by removing this amendment, by this amendment being in here, it brings us back to that type of discrimination. And I think we should take it out. Don't wait for the sunset.
Is there further debate? Senator Lehman.
Madam President, I'm moving to ask unanimous consent that I be allowed to abstain from voting on this amendment and the entire bill because of the potential conflict. I have clients who may be affected by it.
There is objection, Senator Lehman. You will have to vote both on the amendment and on the bill. Are we ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number 2 pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? The Secretary, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary, please record the roll. Amendment number 2 has failed to pass the Senate by a vote of 8 yeas and 12 nays. Senator Adams.
Thank you, Madam President. May we move down to unfinished business?
Hearing no objection, we're under unfinished business. Senator
my son's
Adams?
My son's getting married tomorrow in Anchorage, so I move and ask unanimous consent that I be excused from not subject to the call right now till plain time on Sunday, Madam President.
Hearing no objection, Senator Adams, you will be excused. As your parting shot, would you please move us all the way back up to introductions?
No. Madam President, I move and ask unanimous consent we go back up to introductions.
Thank you, Senator Adams. In the Miller Gallery at this time, I would like to please introduce to the body my husband, Mike Williams, and his mother, who is visiting us from England, Mrs. Gertrude Williams. Are there other introductions? Madam Secretary, did we get a message from the governor? Why don't you go ahead and read it?
Message dated May 3rd. Dear President Parrish, on this day I have signed the following bill. Transmit the engrossed and roll copies to the Lieutenant Governor's office for permanent filing. House CS for Senate Bill Number 84, Finance, making a special appropriation of the principal of the permanent fund, Chapter 20, SLA 1996. Those are all the messages.
Thank you. That brings us back to Senate Bill 215. We are in second reading. Madam Secretary, do you have further amendments?
Amendment number 3 by Senator Donnelly, page 1, after line 3, the amendment has been distributed.
Senator Donnelly?
I move amendment number 3.
There is objection, Senator Donnelly.
Well, Mr. President, Madam President, this is an old friend of ours. Body has adopted similar language in other vehicles that have moved through the system that haven't made it. One of the problems why they haven't completed their journey through the legislative process was that our budget is already formed for this year, and that
if we were to change how the pupil transportation money was distributed, it would cause difficulties for the bureaucracy. They wouldn't know exactly how to do it. They would probably prorate it, although representatives of the Anchorage School District have told me they said they would discriminate against Anchorage even more than they already are with pupil transportation. So this proposal does a couple things. First of all, we're all familiar with the problem that Anchorage students aren't being reimbursed equally or on a fair basis for pupil transportation in the Anchorage School District as other areas of the state. So this would simply say that deals with it on two levels. First of all, that the reimbursement for transportation would be equal within the state program, for whether or not it's a public or a private transportation facility being provided or vehicle. And that the discrepancy that the Department of Education could assign between various locations in Alaska wouldn't be more than 10%, so that the difference between pupil transportation reimbursement in the Fairbanks area versus the Anchorage area, there couldn't be more than 10% difference between those and any other parts of the state that are participating in the program. And then finally, it wouldn't put this into effect until July 1st of 1997, so that those rules would be in effect through the next budget cycle. So then in the, not the coming fiscal year, but the year after that, the next budget we develop, not the one we have developed, could be adjusted to meet that new criteria, so that nobody would suffer because of that, but that there would be fairness for the first time in the statewide distribution of the pupil transportation dollars. Currently, to refresh the members' information, some of the buses used by the Anchorage School District currently, I think, get 66% reimbursement for their costs, while others get 100%. And it's the only district in the state where they discriminate against them in that manner. This would just bring some equality statewide and delay the implementation of that for more than a year from now, so that it can be addressed during the next budget cycle.
Is it a debate? Senator Frank.
Well, again, Madam President, I don't think we should do this. I don't know what the effects are going to be, other than I know the effects will be to cause a proration to every other school district. I don't know. Might help Fairbanks, I'm not sure. Might hurt Fairbanks, I'm not sure. I got a feeling that I don't know. It says any differences between school districts in the level of reimbursement for transportation may not exceed 10%. I don't know. Does that mean per bus, per mile, for what? I don't know. Again, this area has been done on a reimbursement basis. Anchorage may be treated unfairly, and I don't know. We're talking about reallocation. I don't think we should do that on the floor.
I'd oppose the amendment.
So further debate. Senator Duncan.
Madam President, may we have one of these, please?
Senate will stand at ease. Will the Senate please come back to order? Amendment number 3 to Senate Bill 215 has been moved. Senator Donner, were you seeking the floor?
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, discussions of the at ease here, people seemed uncomfortable with the language that appeared on line nine, beginning there, the any difference between school districts and level reimbursement for transportation provided by the school districts may not exceed 10%. And since this would be hammered out next year, it'd be better to formulate that during the next budget process. And so I just move to amend the amendment to just delete that sentence.
Does everybody understand the amendment to the amendment? The secretary doesn't understand the amendment. Senator, would you please repeat what you're deleting by line?
Line, page 1, line 9.
any difference between school districts in the level reimbursement for transportation provided by the school districts may not exceed 10%, to delete that.
We have a motion to amend amendment number 3. Is there objection to amending the amendment?
Yeah.
Senator Taylor.
I think that's clever because what deleting that sentence does is that leaves the words just preceded, a contract with a school district shall be the same. The 10% was actually a limitation factor on the fiscal impact, and by removing it, the full fiscal impact occurs this year. Not this year, but on the effective date. Excuse me. So as a consequence, the full fiscal impact that this would have would be driven all at one time, as opposed to just getting everybody within 10%. And so if you oppose the fiscal impact that this thing is going to have by amending as suggested, I think you're driving even a larger fiscal impact, because there would at least be a 10% variable that would be allowed. Once you remove this, there can be no 10% variable. It has to be the same.
We have an amendment to the amendment before us. Senator Frank, to the amendment to the amendment.
Yeah, I guess I have the same concern the member from Wrangell has. And I don't know, it seems like we ought to have a fiscal note on this and a run on what it means to each and every school district around the state. It is a reimbursable system we have now. I'm not sure how they reimburse. I thought they reimbursed your full cost. Perhaps they don't in Anchorage. I don't know. But I think that members should understand how it affects the districts. We don't have that run. I don't know what the fiscal note rule is, but I've heard the senator from Eagle River, that co-chairs the Finance Committee, talk about it a lot, and I've heard the member from Juneau complain about not having an adequate fiscal note many, many, many times on the floor, and I guess I'm going to complain about not having one right now.
Senator Duncan.
Thank you, Madam President. We always complain because you're the ones in charge. But, Madam President, I think what the senator from Wrangell said is just the opposite of what he said would happen here. I believe that the reason this 10%, this is not my amendment, but I believe that the reason that the 10% variance was put in here was to try to narrow the gap between districts. That the perceived gap, and maybe it is or maybe it's not, but anyway, the perceived gap is greater than 10%, and so the senator from Anchorage is saying, let's narrow it so it can't be any greater than 10%. If you delete this language, they can do what they're doing now. There'd be variations between districts on reimbursement. So the variations could be what they are now. But by deleting this language, what you are saying is that contract employees and school district employees should be paid the same rate, the bus drivers. Or reimbursement should be the same for a school district bus or for a contract bus. So I don't believe it does what you said it does, but it's not my amendment.
Senator Donnelly?
The minority leader is correct. The first sentence of the proposed amendment deals with the internal workings of school districts, how the Department of Transportation reimburses an activity within a single school district. The second sentence, which the amendment to the amendment proposes to delete, dealt with how they discriminate among separate school districts.
Frank?
Well, I think the longer we debate this, the more I can come up with questions, or the more questions I can come up with. You know, when you have a contract school bus service, you don't buy any buses, you buy a service. I don't know what Anchorage does. My understanding is they have some buses of their own, and they hire employees to drive them. They pay them wages. They pay them benefits. They probably let them go down to a room on their breaks. They probably, who knows? They might give them uniforms. They might have, they might have risk management costs, they might have personnel costs, they might have a whole host of administrative costs. Who knows? I mean, I'm not saying I know, I'm just saying I don't know. When you have employees and you have
district-owned buses, does the school district get reimbursed for the cost of new buses each year? I don't know. I don't know what their policy is. They have a bunch of regulations that probably none of us are very familiar with. I don't mind, you know, debating the issue, trying to bring equity to the Anchorage School District, but I do oppose dealing with it as a floor amendment. Now, the senator has dealt with it in the committee. We have never dealt with it, I think, in a substantive fashion with the department really there at the table and able to give us the information. We've never gotten a run on the information as to what its effects are. We've never understood the difference, or I've never understood the differences in the way different school districts operate their bus systems, nor the differences in reimbursement between districts. Don't know any of that. The only thing I do know is that reimbursable, that it keeps growing. We're spending more money today than we used to. That is growing faster than is our student population, growing faster than that. That's a concern to me. I think it does need to be looked at. I think we do need to formulate a better way of reimbursing and paying for student transportation, because right now it's growing faster than students are. And so I'm concerned about it. I just don't think we ought to be doing it right here in this fashion without knowing the consequences.
Linda Taylor.
Yeah. I thought the testimony or the statements made earlier by the member from Anchorage offering the amendment were that there was about a 40% differential in pay between bus driver reimbursement for bus drivers employed by the private contractor getting 100% and those employed by the school district getting 60% reimbursement from the state to that school district. That's about what we are reimbursing schools across the board in municipalities. Depending upon how much your local community is contributing towards the cost of education, all of us are paying 35% of the cost. And we're paying that out of local funds.